good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world, and thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On the Reader News Bulletin, your trusted companion for up-to-the-minute news, in-depth analysis, and thought-provoking commentary on the issues that shape our nation and the world around us. Now, this is not just a bulletin, it's a space for context, for clarity, and connection. Here at On the Reader, we go beyond the headlines to unpack the stories that matter, exploring how current events impact Namibia's journey towards economic growth, social justice, and national development. We bring you breaking stories, exclusive interviews, and expert perspectives across politics, business, health, technology, climate, education, and international affairs. So whether it's a decision in the corridors of power, shifts in the global economy, or stories from our communities, our goal is to inform, empower, and engage. So thanks to our nationwide radio frequencies, streamlining platforms, and our interactive Eagle FM website, we keep you connected wherever you are. And now you can stay even closer to the pulse by subscribing to a WhatsApp channel for daily headlines, alerts, and behind-the-scenes updates. So stay with us and be part of the national conversation. This is On the Reader, your reliable news partner on Eagle FM. And now for the news. The Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform has officially lifted the temporary ban on the importation of maize seeds from South Africa with immediate effect. The ban was originally imposed as a precautionary measure after the detection of gross wilt in a maize seed consignments imported from South Africa. Now, the disease poses a risk to maize production, prompting authorities to halt imports while assessments were carried out. Following through evaluations and the implementation of mitigation measures, the ministry has deemed it safe to resume maize seed imports. Farmers and agricultural suppliers can now source maize seeds from South Africa under existing regulatory guidelines. The ministry continues to emphasize the importance of plant health surveillance and encourages all stakeholders to remain vigilant and report any unusual symptoms in crops. Let's now turn to Simon Nyipandura, who is the public relations officer in the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. Good afternoon, Simon. It's a pleasure to have you right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to you.
Now, what exactly, Simon, is gross wilt and how serious is it in the threat to Namibia's agricultural sector?
Okay, gross wilt is a bacterial disease which affects maize and is caused by Clavibacter micnicus. It's a virus that, or a disease, or that causes that happens to take place in the maize. It originates originally from the United States, and it's now found in parts of South Africa or parts of Africa, including South Africa. The disease causes dark green to black lesions with water soaked edge on the maize liver. Freckles on dark spots within lesion, wilting and premature plant death, and it reduces the yield up to 50% if it's a severe outbreak.
Go ahead.
You know, please find.
Okay, so how was the disease detected in the imported maize seeds, and what measures were taken to maintain it locally?
So in Namibia, it was not detected. So what happens is all the countries which are our trading partners, especially when it comes to plant health or animal health, there are certain global measures, which in this case phytosanitary measures that are in place. So should your country or should a country detect a certain virus or that can harm plant material or animal material, so they will not have to be, so it's an obligation for you to notify the rest. So this was detected in South Africa. The South African authorities have now notified the ministry. So they started to do investigation and also obviously the causes and the mitigation factor. So Namibia as a country, we had to now put up the ban to prevent it from entering into our country.
Mm-hmm. Now moving on with another question. Why does Namibia rely on imported maize seeds from South Africa? Is the country unable to produce or store enough of its own seeds?
Namibia imports maize seeds primarily because local seed production is limited in scale and capacity. So we are having breeding programs for high-yielding disease-resistant hybrids, which is currently taking place and sponsored under the program of NAMSIP. But also we import because people also, the varieties that we import could be that are not those that the farmers want. So preference is given to farmers, so they also give them the free will. So it's not necessary because we don't have the best seed. Number one is just that the low production of seed in the country, which is it's an area for farmers to take advantage of, but also preferably the farmers also prefer certain variety that might not be found in Namibia.
Mm-hmm. But Namibia does have, or does it probably not have, the infrastructure and capacity to develop a national seed bank or storage system for long-term resilience, or is that in place or perhaps not?
The capacity we have, it's in place. It's not sufficient to support the whole country, but somehow we are in still in discussion, especially with our developmental partners, and non-governmental organizations such as the GIZ, which is doing farming for resilience. We've got the EU is also assisting in that regard. We've got, as I said, we've got the African Development Bank, which is funding the NAMSIP, and we've got various programs to put up seed banks in all 10 crop growing regions, so as well as seed processing plants, and we've got actually I've got communal farmers in communal areas that are actually assisting in this process of seed growing. Mm-hmm. We've got also activities that are taking place on crop research stations all around the country.
Okay. Now, also, in light of this, with the efforts that you spoke about to, I guess, help strengthen local seed production, but how furthermore can we go in order to reduce dependency on external sources, especially in light of plant disease risks?
I think that's it's not just a governmental effort, but it's an effort that all the Namibian people should dive into. Considering the fact that the president called for an 80% reduction in importation, that is now not just a governmental thing. It's now for, these are now gaps that are in our farming sector that can be employed or explored by our farmers and those that are aspiring to go into the agricultural sector. That's where we stand, and that's the solution that we need to get into.
Simon, before I let you go, I know that the ministry continues to emphasize the importance of plant health surveillance and encourages stakeholders to remain vigilant, especially in what in the document that was released today. Now, what kind of testing or certification processes are in place right now to ensure that imported seeds are safe and that those who are actually importing to sell to the Namibian people are not just doing it for the benefit of getting the finances out of it, but that to ensure that they are safe and that this particular bacteria or virus doesn't spread over to our maize?
Okay, first of all, before one imports their maize or plant material to Namibia, we need to get assurance from the country of origin that whatever is being imported into Namibia is free of such pathogens or diseases.
Yeah.
And also in alliance with our act, which is the Plant Act, that is also under review to make it better. So at the borders, all these permits are are presented or points of entry. Number two, should there be detections? Of course, we are having labs at the within the ministry that do the testing for suspected consignments. So yes.
Okay. And what message would you want to give to farmers, or perhaps also to those stakeholders involved, those who will be getting the seeds from South Africa? What message would you want to give them at this point in light of this, now that the ban has been lifted?
We still urge the farmers to take precautionary measures, to follow the rules and regulations that are in place, and make sure that we do not contaminate our plant industry in the country. So we urge them to follow the regulations that are already in place. And should they need more information, our office lines are usually always free, or they can contact us on our various social media platforms.
Okay. Simon Nyipandura, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a blessed day.
Okay. And there we had it from Simon Nyipandura. He is the PRO in the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. Now, we're still staying and sticking around to this particular story. Why Namibia is still importing maize from South Africa? This is a story that I think we need to interrogate. And you can also be part of the conversation. Our studio number is very much open. 0832888401 is the number in studio. For now, let's take a pause and we'll be back to still talk about the same story. Stay with us.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And we are back. We're talking about, or what prompted this conversation is the partial lift the lift of the ban that was specially imposed on importation of maize seeds from South Africa. And that was because of the gross wilt, a sort of bacteria called Clavibacter. And the scientific name is actually but it's quite long. But now let's turn to agronomist Jacob Mutote. Jacob, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Can you hear me well?
Yes, I can hear you.
Mm. Now, Jacob, I was actually surprised when I came across that the ban that has been had been imposed on maize seeds has now been lifted by the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. And one thing that popped to my mind is that we have such good top score here in Namibia. Why is Namibia still importing maize seeds from South Africa?
Well, thank you for the question. It's a very interesting topic. We Namibians, we grow quality maize. And it's producing those quality top scores and other things that we get from our maize. However, all the seeds that we plant here, they are coming from outside, mostly South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are believed to be high-quality seeds, and they are hybrid seeds, to say. And these are the ones that we that are favorable for our condition. They are proven to be that. And unfortunately, we will be relying on those ones.
Okay. Now, you see, we do import from South Africa because they are hybrid seeds. Why can't we, since you import perhaps this year, why can't you grow the maize and then store some, or actually the maize that grows, you take those seeds and actually use them for the following year? Because back then when I was still very young, I still remember my grandmother storing seeds that we will use for the next year. So why are we not doing that?
Well, it's very critical when it comes to maize, because these hybrid seeds, basically means these seeds are, it's a cross-pollination between two different varieties. to create a trait that is suitable for the environment. So when you breed these two traits, they come up with that one seed, which is a hybrid seed. And if you grow that, if you plant that, that now the first generation F1, when it goes to F2, the quality of the seeds starts deteriorating. And it's also not proven to how quality the next, the F2, F3 generations will be, because it ends with the F1. So these seeds are only favorable when you are planting them for the first generation. Our seeds that we store, like Mahango, the one that we normally have, this one are open pollinated seeds. And the open pollinated seeds are the seeds that can grow well, they can do well for the generations to come. You can say, you can go up to F10, but seed quality doesn't change. So the quality of the seed remains the same, the quality of the output remains the same, and the yield remains the same. So that's why the Mahango that we have, it's being stored year after year to be reused. And we also have this few variety of Kashana, Kangara, and all these Mahango seeds that we have. Some of them are also hybrid seeds because they were bred to, they went through that breeding process for a specific condition, which is now dry. You know, Namibia is getting too dry. So they developed these seeds, and that's why we also don't replant Kashana seeds. So for this reason that we are very much affected, and we will be very much affected if Namibia can ban the import of maize seeds.
That's quite some interesting information that you're giving out right there. So, but then what exactly is being done with the seeds? Is it some sort of chemical tempering that makes the seed not be able to be used again for the third or for the second or third consecutive time? And even if it does, it is used, then it won't yield as much as it did in the first year.
Yeah, one would say that. One would also believe that it's just because there's known research about the fourth generation. One would also say it's monopoly from the seed selling companies. Just like it is when, if I'm to take you out of topic, just like it is when it comes to these chickens and layers. So these ones are also just that bread. If you can't get a second generation from that, it can be monopoly. It also can be just a theory. But these seeds are not. In most cases, we have this GMO, genetically modified seeds.
Yeah.
These ones are the ones that are done in laboratories, and they are kind of genetic tempering with. And some chemicals involvement with the GMOs. However, hybrid is just a cross pollination between believed traits that are believed to be good. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's tempered within that form.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't really expect it to do well, because it's coming from two different parents. Maybe this parent is good in pest resistance and, you know, diseases. And this one is also good in let's say, yield. So you bring these ones together to create a seed that is both pest resistant and can also give you the optimum yield. So when you bring this together, then you have your first generation. From there, you will then not be sure what the second generation will be there. But we farmers can also do research on our own. You bring your seeds, then you breed them, you plant them, then you go until the second generation, then you see how the F seeds will be, or how the F yield will be. Then from there we can talk about having our own seeds. Yeah, but for farmers, we are not willing to take that risk. We'd rather buy the hybrid seeds that are tested.
Okay. Now, I did ask the public relations officer of the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, that is Simon Nyipandura, on whether Namibia has the infrastructure and capacity to develop a national seed bank or storage system for long-term resilience. And he said, we do have the capacity and it's actually apparently in the pipeline. But considering that we want to be self-food sufficient, you know, to be able to sustain ourselves now, isn't this something that perhaps should definitely be being spoken at on the tables, to put it even as much or as little, I don't know if that actually makes sense, as importing seeds, maize seeds.
Yeah, if the government is having something of such nature into a pipeline and they're discussing about it, it would be a very good thing, because currently we want to produce as much as we can, but the prices of seeds is quite high. And I'm telling you, the prices of seeds is quite high.
Mm.
You can get 5 kg of seeds is around 2,000. So imagine
5 kg of seeds is 2,000.
25 kg of seeds, you can go up to 2,000, or some of them can go up to 6,000.
Imagine.
So seeds are very expensive.
Imagine
how many farmers can afford it.
Yeah.
Not quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite. That's why we end up planting the F2. Then we get low yields. And whatever we get, Namib Mills takes it, mills it, and it's the end of it. Then when it comes to the month of October, November, there, January, then you see seeds coming from, you see maize coming from America. They are now importing, these are now modified seeds, the GMOs,
mm-hmm.
modified seeds. So if there is something of such nature in Namibia, we will be so grateful. Because I see this Menhem Research Station in Tsumeb is now busy with Mahangu. They have been trying to breed Mahangu. And we are so grateful that we just want them to go for maize. Because we depend on maize, that the market is on maize, and most of our people consume maize in Namibia.
Yeah.
But imagine they are also doing it to Mahangu, they can also just diversify and go to maize. And other, and also other crops. So we can have seeds in Namibia and buy them on a lower price. So those prices are the ones that are killing us right now. And Zambia has also started that. They are doing quite well. I have tried planting Zam seeds. They are doing very well. So instead of buying expensive one from South Africa, now we are buying from Zambia.
And so it's quite affordable, I take it.
Yeah, it's quite affordable as compared to South Africans. So if Zambia can do it, then we can also do it.
Exactly.
We can also do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jacob Mutota, what should you be given a platform right now to advise the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform in terms of seed growing and also seed banking, our own seed bank or storage system? What advice would you give to them?
What the government should do, they should take these research stations that we have, being Menhem, being Okashana. Then they do that research station for my maize seed research purposes only. They put enough budget for that. They recruit qualified people to do breeding. Then from there we will have our own seeds. Because we are mostly concentrating on horticulture only, which is vegetable production. But agronomy is the most important thing, because we, in agronomy, we deal with grains. And grains is the key thing when it comes to food, putting food on the table. You can't have vegetables if you don't have either pasta, either pap, rice. All these are falls under agronomy. So they should look into seed multiplication. And they should also look into producing high quality seeds. Not GMO seeds, just hybrid seeds, maize breeds. So that we avoid importing seeds from outside that are quite expensive. Then we can also produce at the right scale, and we can also maximize profit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want the government to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of research stations. We have hard-up schemes and other countries are even just dying of everything is bloodletting. I think there are a few plots that are run by individuals, but they can use all these infrastructures they have for seed multiplication, seed breeding, and seed production.
Okay. Jacob Mutota, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin and thoroughly actually interrogating this topic with us.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
The pressure discussing agricultural related issues.
Indeed.
Was the key and the backbone of Vietnamese.
The best just got better. Bharti's fiber packages that give you unbeatable internet speeds at unbelievable prices. Enjoy speeds of up to 10 megabits per second, starting from just 500 Namibian dollars, excluding VAT. Sign up now for these fiber packages that are pushing the boundaries of innovation, so you can enjoy more connectivity, faster browsing at even more affordable prices. Visit your nearest Bharti's offices to find out more, or go to bharti.africa/Namibia to sign up online.
Lipuranenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nuneo do otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi nitayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijamoiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On the Reader News Bulletin right here on Eagle FM. Moving on to other news, the government of Namibia is officially participating in the US Africa Business Summit in Luanda, Angola, marking a major push to attract foreign investment across key sectors. Now, the four-day summit being held from 22 June to 25 June and organized by the Corporate Council on Africa gathered more than 1,500 delegates, including African heads of state, U.S. government officials, and private sector leaders. At the Invest in Namibia panel held today on June 24, the Namibian delegation highlighted opportunities in green energy, agribusiness, mining, and ICT, underlining the country's strategic advantage and stable investment climate. Namibia invited potential investors to explore ventures in clean energy, seeking to replicate its recent 100 megawatt solar PV success, sustainable agribusiness and digital infrastructure, emphasizing its national AI strategy and ongoing e-health projects. Let's now take a listen to President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, who is speaking at the event, and she highlighted that on critical sectors that Namibia has that have been identified, and she said they are open for investment as infrastructure development, such as roads, railway, deepening of harbors, just to mention some, and similarly that Namibia's natural beautiful features and well-managed wildlife of Namibia's tourism industry is not fully exploited, and Namibia is a place that they can also visit. She mentioned that although Namibia is dry and known to be a dry country with poor rainfall, it is, however, a smart agricultural investment. She indicated that agriculture is open for food security and also to compete globally in key agricultural subsectors such as small and large livestock, meat, dates, blueberries, and grapes, where the early market entry gives it a distinct competitive edge. Let's now take a listen to the president's speech.
Because Namibia is known as a beef country, also we are investing on cash crops such as dates, blueberries, grapes, and others. On top of that, as our Minister of International Relations and Trade has mentioned, Namibia is a place where you can really recharge as a tourist. And this is because of our natural beautiful features, complemented by our wildlife that is well managed. Namibia is a country where our citizens have agreed to coexist with wildlife. However, we are very careful by putting in place clear policies that will mitigate human-wildlife conflict. And this is based on our constitution that calls for sustainable utilization of our natural resources. So therefore, when we are advocating for the harvesting of wildlife, it's not because we want to extinct them, but it's part and parcel of sustainable utilization of wildlife. And that's why most countries we are meeting nowadays, both European and Africans, they would want to purchase wildlife from Namibia. You are free to do so. We will negotiate heavily. But remember, it will not be permanent. Because once you take them within 5 years, they are already not looking like animals. You want to come back. So therefore, work with us so that you keep them in their natural environment and you come and see them in their natural environment and their natural look. It's very important for us to know that. While coming to invest in Namibia, we want also you to bring in skills as well as to transfer skills to the Namibians. Therefore, we are calling for joint ventures between yourself and Namibian entrepreneurs. Similarly, we have now adopted our policy of PP, which is public-private partnership. We can also engage in those activities. Finally, because of the time and with experts who are coming, the Namibian team is here. They are more familiar with the subject. They are more technical people. I am elected to provide policy guidance. I just want to tell you that upon resuming office of the presidency on the 21st of March of this year, for a very good reason, I have decided to restructure government offices. Therefore, today, trade and investment are under the Minister of International Relations and Trade, where the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board falls. While the upstream of oil and gas is placed in the office of the president, it's a new industry. It needs to be well understood. And I felt that the Namibian people, having given me that responsibility, they trusted me to take care of the big issues of economic natures that are coming into our country. Therefore, as we stand now, the Minister of Trade, the Minister of International Relations and Trade is under clear instructions to make sure that the Namibia Investment Promotion and Facilitation Bill is finalized as a matter of urgency. I'm mentioning it because I know many of you have been attending Namibian events. You have been hearing about this bill. And I don't want to hide it from you. It is not dead. It's alive. And the minister is taking it up very seriously. It's very important because it will create an enabling environment to attract investment both locally and domestic. However, while waiting for the finalization of the law, some tax incentives have already been introduced during the current financial year. For example, the corporate tax is reduced from 32% to 30%, effective from the 1st of April 2025 financial year. And looking ahead, we are considering for further corporate tax reduction to 28% in starting the year 2026 financial year. Additionally, Namibia offers generous capital allowance to facilitate the growth of investment across various sectors. Therefore, please be ready to listen to the team. I can only assure you that Namibia is open for business and our government is ready within our laws to create a conducive environment for business. And we are not only looking for investors, we will welcome investors who are ready to work with us to meet the goals set out for Namibian people while you are making your profit. Don't hesitate, don't think twice. Just come to Namibia and you'll find us there. Thank you very much.
Now, to interrogate on this, we turn to economist Charles Kakuru. Good afternoon, Charles. Which one is it? I'm sorry.
It's Kakuru.
Yes, Charles Kakuru. On how Namibia intends to leverage this opportunity to boost economic growth back at home. Now, we do understand that the president, our president, Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, is currently in Luanda, Angola, where they are attending the U.S. Africa Business Summit, right there in Luanda, where Namibia is pushing for other countries to invest in Namibia for economic growth. Charles, what does this engagement, say on a broader prospect, for you as an economist?
Thank you very much. And, based on the Invest in Namibia Summit currently, going on in Luanda, Angola, I think for me and for many other Namibians, it's quite a powerful moment, for example, for Namibia to shape its investment narrative. It shouldn't only be seen the summit, for example, in the context of Namibia as a destination, but it must also come out for me as a strategic partner, or Namibia's strategic partner, one of the strategic partners for Africa's economic transformation. So that is what I want to see Namibia promoting itself, branding itself at the summit at the current moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
At that engagement, the president of Namibia spoke about Namibia's corporate business, corporate tax, which is set, it is actually reduced already from 32% to 30%. And she said come 2026, it's going to be reduced further at 28%. Do you think this is a good move to reduce corporate tax? And why perhaps is Namibia decreasing it or lowering it? Is it perhaps to attract more investors, or how is this going to benefit us in the long run?
Yeah, no, I think in essence, it's quite a good gesture to many investors. But first of all, before we can say the corporate tax was reduced this 1st of April from 32% to the current 30%. But when it comes to, for example, investment attraction, we really need to also look at our competitors, for example, within the SADC or within the sub-Saharan Africa, in terms of whether the reduction from 32% to 30% is a good gesture enough attract investors.
Mm.
But indeed, it's a good move that was initiated. If you look currently, for example, South Africa's corporate tax is around 28%.
Mm.
So in terms of an investor, because the summit itself has got many sub-Saharan African countries at the specific summit. So what are their offerings? We need to understand what are they going to offer them. If, for example, any other country within the sub-Saharan Africa's corporate tax is, for example, 20%, what then can Namibia, or how can Namibia still be able to attract? What can we offer in addition to that? So those are some of the areas that we really need to focus into.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the investment climate, in terms of, for example, connectivity, are we able to beat our competitors within the SADC, within the sub-Saharan Africa? Yes, of course, in terms of connectivity, we have got good infrastructure and so forth and so on. As compared, for example, to many other sub-Saharan African countries. But in terms of that, I don't think it's quite an indicator alone that can be able to pull investors to our country. We need to look at many others that we can be able to add on, or as add-ons, so that we can be able to attract more investors to Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, the president also spoke about shifting gears also to wildlife, our wildlife, for investments as well. Generally, Namibia is the wildlife is generally for tourism. Tourists come to Namibia and check and see our wildlife, and of course that promotes tourism. But she also emphasized that we're not going to extinct them. Would you say this is a good move by the president? And bear in mind, last year when Namibia killed actually wild animals, elephants being part of them to feed some of the Namibian people because of how we were experiencing an emergency of hunger situation at then, and of course internationally we're criticized because of that move. Do you think that is a good move that the president has highlighted to say we're going to also look at our wildlife, not just for tourism aspects, but also from other aspects, so we can also generate money in terms of that? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think when it comes to that, one thing that I would like to say, now you are reminding me of one mega project in, in Egypt,
mm-hmm.
which attracted around 35 billion in terms of FDIs.
Mm.
So the focus on that was tourism, real estate, as well as other infrastructure development. But when it comes to the issues that you are alluding to, we know exactly tourism is one of the key contributing factors, that key attractors to this country. The summit itself, we are supposed to, if you look at the program, the focus is quite more on oil and gas. But then what are our key priorities as a country?
Mm.
Oil and gas alone. Mm. We have got issues of tourism sector. How then could we package, for example, ready investment projects that are ready for investors?
Yeah.
One of them being tourism. And we know in terms of from the southern parts of the country to the northern parts to the eastern parts of the country, tourism is one of the key. Now, the issue of drought, which led to what the challenge that we had in terms of feeding or putting down a couple of number of our wildlife to feed our nation.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the issues in terms of how can we be able to bring in investors. If it's about tourism, how can we, if it's about drought issues that affected our wildlife, how then do we boost agriculture, for example, and be able to have enough feed to feed our wildlife?
Mm.
So these are some of the things that we need to package around and present it, because it's an opportunity for us. Present it at the summit, say we have these challenges of drought, but we want investors to come in and say into agriculture, produce feed for our wildlife, so that we don't go through this challenge in the coming future. So those are some of the things that we need to take on.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, maybe how do we Also, if you look at that Egypt project, bring about tourism or agro-tourism with, you know, agriculture on the side, as well as maybe many others in terms of infrastructure development in underserved, for example, regions and so forth and so on. So we need to have investor-ready projects, you know, with complete feasibility studies, both technical as well as financial. So I think with that, we can be able to have enough investments coming in. The other issue is the summit itself. I've heard Her Excellency, our president, championing our PPP frameworks in terms of joint ventures, in terms of...
And partnerships,
Yes, partnerships and so forth and so on. I think we should be able to use the expertise, both locally as well as internationally, in order to help us, you know, structure these blended finance deals, to say to it that we align our investor returns with our national priorities.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the issues that we need to look at. But also, we have what is called the world now is now currently pushing for ESG integration.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we then adopt that within our investment frameworks to ensure that both our wildlife, from the agriculture, from the tourism, whatever sector, is included within that, and be able to have impactful social outcomes. So those are some of the issues that I would like the summit to look into.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chaskakuru, Peradventure, we draw in a lot of investors into Namibia that are going to invest in different aspects of Namibia for the betterment of the economy. What would you say that we should be cautious of? Because as much as investors are coming to Namibia, not all of them would come with a very good agenda. Perhaps there might be hidden agendas behind that. And not only all that, what about safeguarding Namibia's resources and not just leaving them to go to investors and also benefiting the entire Namibia and not just those on top? What would you say?
I think one area that we need to clearly look at this is, yes, of course, we need to be very quite cautious.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to have integrative business models in terms of how then can we be able to learn from others in terms of how they are safeguarding their resources and so forth and so on. One aspect that we need to look at, yes, of course, in terms of our local content policies, it mandates for joint ventures, but also at the same time, there was a debate or concerns, and it's currently ongoing in terms of foreign companies investing in Namibia, but they have to share, for example, certain percentage of their companies to Namibians. Yes, it's a good initiative, but that's one of a tenor, for example, for many investors.
Mm.
We need to scrutinize win-win solutions. It's quite very challenging, so to say. But in terms of, for example, at the board levels, in terms of, we need to have people that care for our country. We need investments of investors that are able to upscale in terms of our skills development.
Yeah.
So that we have Namibians also saving in those executive structures and so forth and so on. Then we have good decisions. And then once we know the decision that I'm making, we need to report our respective, for example, line ministries or wherever that we have to report to ensure that, for example, the issue of the export of minerals at face value, we shouldn't be able to do that. We need to ensure that we add value to that and ensure that there is enough export to that. The other issue is, I think a few weeks back, if I'm not mistaken, if not last week, the last of last week, we saw I'm not quite sure whether I think he was the CEO of Africa Export Import Bank where he narrated to say, we are currently establishing, or bank is establishing the shipping route between Nigeria and Namibia. So this in itself, it shows already that in terms of our connectivity, how best can we ensure that any investor that comes within to invest in our country, there is this information package to say, this is how you can be able to export. And the investors that we are also bringing on board, is it investors that are going to export or export-led or just to produce and consume within the country? So those are some of the gaps that we need to look at. What are we really looking at? Where, which areas are we going to focus on and so forth and so on?
Okay.
Yes.
Now, just Kakuru, before I do let you go, finally, in regards to the U.S.-Africa Business Summit being held in Luanda, what should Africans be cautious of as they attend this U.S.-Africa Business Summit? Let's not forget that President Donald Trump imposed tariffs to African countries, of which they've been put on a 90-day pause, but we are still not clear of what the way forward. What is it that African countries, not just Namibia in particular, but African countries should be cautious of as they attend this business summit?
First of all, you have stated it very quite clear in terms of what we need to be very cautious of. As you can see with AGOA's future, it's currently uncertain, and the emerging of other markets such as China, to the east, I would say, it's quite growing. So we need to be, as a country, we need to shift in terms of diversity or to diversify our partnership with other trading countries. That the imposition of tariffs by the U.S. president on African nations, it's a clear sign that we need to safeguard in terms of our trading sovereignty. So we need to be very cautious because the summit itself is to strengthen ties between Africa and as well as the United States. But at the same time, there has been tariffs that are being imposed. So we need to look further to deepen other economic integration partners so that our export or our exports are cheaper and competitive at the global stage. We shouldn't be so reliant on the United States. The United States is currently changing so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a partner that African states can be able to rely on. It's not a country that we can be able to trust at this current moment. So we need to diversify in terms of whom we trade with. But at the same time, we need to be to trade a lot within the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, which is quite currently, I think, less than 20%. So if we can be able to expand that, I think Africa itself will be able to save itself from the current global political risks.
Yes. It's always a pleasure engaging you for On the Radar News Bulletin because you always leave us with information that we need and in layman's terms. Thank you so much for making time and availing yourself for On the Radar News Bulletin.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And there you had it from economist Charles Kakuru as we are interrogating the U.S.-Africa Business Summit currently underway in Luanda, Angola, where Namibia is positioning itself as a potential investor for investors to explore in ventures such as clean energy, as well as sustainable agribusiness and digital infrastructure, and emphasizing its national AI strategy and ongoing e-health projects. Now, remember, this is the News Bulletin where we allow you also to partake in it. Our studio number is 083-288-401. Kindly dial us up and be part of the conversation. We'd also love to hear from you. What is your opinion? What is your take on the news that we just brought to you? With that being said, let's pause here, take a trip to the marketplace, but we still have more news coming your way. Remember, I'm keeping you company until 14:30 now for a commercial break.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otuwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali heavy nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile konderewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Want to know?
Welcome back. Stay connected with Eagle FM, news without borders. Now, Eagle FM is everywhere, always on, always accessible. Whether you're commuting, working, or relaxing at home, simply plug in your earphones and stay informed with minimal inconveniences. Our platform delivers real-time news and analysis straight to your mobile phone, keeping you in the know wherever you are. In partnership with our sister e-paper, The Villager Newspaper, we deliver concise, expert summaries of Namibia's latest business, economic, and policy developments delivered digitally every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's your essential brief to start the week informed and stay ahead. Now, whether you're looking to grow your business reach, well, our complimentary apps, including the Imba app and the Eagle FM app, offer targeted opportunities for companies to increase visibility of their products and services across a wide spectrum of consumers, from urban professionals to rural communities. And let's not forget, our social media platforms are among the most active in the country. Head to Facebook for Eagle FM Namibia or our WhatsApp channel, giving brands, startup and individuals the perfect space to amplify their visibility and connect with engaged audiences in real time. Eagle FM, the eye. And now we turn our focus to one of the most strategically vital maritime passages in the world, the Strait of Hormuz, and examine how escalating tensions between Iran and Israel could have far-reaching consequences for the global economy, energy markets, and even Africa's development agenda. The Strait of Hormuz, a narrow waterway linking the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Oman and the Arabian Sea, is a crucial artery for the global energy trade. Approximately 20 to 25% of the world's oil supply, accounting to nearly 20 million barrels per day, passes through this maritime corridor. It also handles a significant portion of global liquefied natural gas, LNG, exports, particularly from Qatar, one of the world's top natural gas producers. Its geographical importance is heightened by its location between Iran and the Gulf states. On its northern edge lies Iran, and to the south, the United Arab Emirates and Oman. The Strait remains the only sea route for many Gulf nations to export their oil and gas to international markets. And right now, there is currently no viable alternative route that can handle such high volumes, making this a true geopolitical checkpoint. Now, the current instability arises from intensifying tensions between Iran and Israel, sparking concerns that Iran could potentially attempt to block or disrupt the strait in retaliation or as a part of its strategic maneuvers. While such a move remains uncertain, the economic and security implications of any disruption would be immediate and severe. According to the United States Energy Information Administration, about 84% of crude oil and 83% of LNG passes through the strait in 2024 were destined for Asian markets, including China, India, Japan, and South Korea. But disruptions would send shockwaves far beyond the region. Analysts estimate that even a temporary closure could push oil prices above $100 per barrel, with some projections ranging as high as $150 to $200 per barrel in worst-case scenarios. Such price surge would place immense pressure on global inflation, increase operational costs for businesses, and reduce consumer spending. Stock markets would likely experience high volatility, particularly in energy-importing nations, leading to currency depreciations, widening trade deficits, and reduced investor confidence. Africa is not exempted from this global tremors. While not a primary consumer of Middle East oil, the continent remains heavily reliant on fuel imports. In 2024, main mineral fuel imports made up 13% of Africa's total import value, amounting to over $87 billion. Now, oil-producing countries such as Nigeria, despite their natural resources, lack sufficient refining capacity and remain dependent on imported petroleum products. The same applies to mining-dependent economies such as Namibia, Zambia, Botswana, South Africa, and Ghana, where imported fuel powers mining operations and industrial activity. A sustained spike in global oil prices would therefore lead to increased inflation, reduced productivity, and growing pressure on foreign exchange reserves. Fuel subsidies in some African countries may prove unsustainable, and the cost of living could rise significantly for ordinary citizens. Beyond the economic sphere, the security and the diplomatic ramifications of a closure would be equally concerning. The Strait of Hormuz is more than just a regional issue. It's a global security concern. It is a reminder of the vulnerability of international energy systems and the need for diversified supply routes, strategic reserves, and increased investment in renewable energy infrastructure. From a policy perspective, this situation reinforces the urgency for Africa to build energy resilience. That means enhancing local refining capacity, promoting clean energy alternatives, and strengthening regional cooperation in energy policy. Now, while the continent may not control the events in the Gulf, it can prepare for the impact. Now, with that, to interrogate it much further and more, I caught up with economist Dr. Omu Kakuyama-Tundu, who had something to say on the matter. Now, before we actually head over and listen to him, let's take a pause right here. We'll bring you a commercial break and we'll get right into it.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoewe ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanoa Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali hea vi nola natu. Heari bali no heari ile konderewa. Vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM. The eye.
And welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Happy, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Dr. Omu Kakuyama-Tundu, let's talk about the Strait of Hormuz, which is a narrow stretch of sea between Iran and the Gulf countries, which is now one of the most important trade routes in the world, because about a quarter of the world's oil and a big share of the natural gas pass through it every day. For instance, countries like Qatar, a top gas exporter, rely on this route to reach international buyers. Now,
because of the tensions, because of geopolitical tensions, how could a temporary or prolonged disruption in the Strait of Hormuz likely affect global oil prices and inflation trends?
Yes, Happy. This is a very unfortunate event where Israel unprovokingly attacked Iran. Now, what you'll see is that no one wants to listen to Iran, and for Iran to let the world listen to it, it has threatened to close the Strait of Hormuz. Mm-hmm. The Strait of Hormuz, as you have correctly said, you have Qatar this side, you have Bahrain, all those countries. But mind you, also, even with the sanctions on Iran, on their oil and the like, Iran is one of the countries that produce what we call the light sweet crude oil. That is very good to refine. That is cheaper to refine, I mean. And if Iran closes that Strait of Hormuz, as you have also said, it is going to have an upward pressure on international crude oil prices. Now, the oil crude prices, if it comes to Namibia, for instance, where we are oil importing country, remember that it was good news when the price of oil was going down. Even the energy ministry or Ministry of Energy did not increase our petrol prices. That was good for us. Now, when the prices goes up, that is international crude oil prices, as an oil importing countries, our prices will go up, and it could reflect in the commodity prices, the goods that we are buying from the supermarkets, and that could fuel inflation. That is if it lasts for quite a time. And if you look at the other aspect is the currency. Is the rand Namibian dollar going to hold against the US dollar? If it does, then at least that will be not that bad. But if our currency loses its value, that is Namibian dollar, South African rand, mm-hmm. then definitely oil prices is going to hit us very hard. So the closing of the Strait of Hormuz, blocking oil to flow freely to the other countries. The other second one is affecting the global economy.
Yeah.
When the global economy, which is already reeling or suffering under the uncertainty of Trump tariffs, that could weaken further mm-hmm. because of high oil prices and the crisis and the uncertainty in the Middle East, and that would also hit our exports, mineral exports and the like. So I hope that this crisis and conflict is not going to go for very long. I hope that Trump is going to rein in Israel mm-hmm. so that it can stop its attacks on Iran. That is my take on it, Happy.
Now, Dr. Omu, what practical steps would you say can African governments take to improve energy resilience in the face of such global disruptions?
No, it is very, very difficult for now because all oil that is produced in Africa, except a little bit in Nigeria where they have Dangote, have started to try a refinery. Mm. All of us export this to other countries. So there's no way that we can say, okay, we can start importing oil, let's say Namibia from Angola. You'll say, but what about Bugula? Bugula, which is coming from there. That is illegal, and why? Mm. Because Angola subsidized their pump prices. That is the fuel prices, your petrol and diesel. And now Angola is also not happy for their people to export Bugula to Namibia, not to export, but to smuggle.
Yeah.
So that could have been one of the ways, but If you buy straight from Angola, it'll just be straight, and Angola is not having refineries that can cater for the Namibian market, for instance. Mm-hmm. So Africa, what they could do is to try and embark on alternative energy sources, mm-hmm. your solar, your wind energy, mm-hmm. and others. But as for oil, we hear that Namibia has struck oil, but that'll maybe take 10 to 15 years to materialize.
And now we have a scheduled commercial break that is coming up. Let's pause for that. We'll resume right after it.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at USAVE.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news?
Let's now resume that chat up with Dr. Omuka Kwamate.
So I'm not very optimistic in saying that Namibia found some oil because they have not yet found commercial or tested the commercial viability of the Namibian oil, and they have not started drilling. Mm-hmm. So let's try to see how we can also educate our people to save petrol by not driving their vehicles at very high speed, try to keep within the speed limit, try not to drive wherever you like, and in that way we can save petrol and diesel, and that could save us our foreign currency that we import the oil with.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Omu, how should African central banks and finance ministers respond to possible currency depreciation and rising import costs linked to global oil volatility?
Yeah. I can't hear you well, Happy, but I think you are asking how we can try to prop up our currency so that from depreciation.
Correct.
Currency depreciation is determined by how much the outside world, that is the others out there, wants our currency, be it in foreign direct investment, if they want to come in. Invest in our country, or if we have very good stuff that they want to import into their countries, or that we are exporting to their countries, then our currency will go up. But if our exports weaken, as well as the demand for foreign direct investment, then our currency will also weaken. So what we could try and do is to try and find bankable projects where foreigners are going to come in with their dollars, their British pound, their euros, mm-hmm. to bring them over to our country, and the demand for our currency will go up and our currency will strengthen, and that is how we can cushion ourselves against expensive or high petroleum prices.
Mm. Now, this geopolitical tension, would you say it might also, or might not, indirectly affect foreign direct investment?
Definitely. If the global economy slows down, it means even some of those companies that would love to come over here and invest, also their income could go down, and then they could postpone their investment in foreign nations. But definitely you are right. It depends on how long this conflict is going, the global conflict or tensions are going to hold.
Dr. Omu, what's your final take on this Strait of Hormuz that could be actually threatened because of geopolitical tension?
Look, the whole thing is that we are having very, in the White House, that is basically threatening Iran with fire and everything. And that has given Israel the carte blanche to attack Iran. So I think the answer is in the White House. It is very unfortunate that today's White House under Trump, Vance and Hegseth and all that cabal, they are not interested in listening even to their allies, the Europeans, who are saying, please stop this whole thing of attacking Iran.
Yeah.
So it's very, very difficult for us to predict how things are going to go. And I think that is the only thing that will happen is when the White House tells Israel to stop their attacks on Iran. Because Israel is a proxy of the United States administration. Mm-hmm. And if they say stop, they will stop. If they say go ahead, then things are going to be prolonged. So hopefully, with the United Nations Security Council, if they pass a resolution, unfortunately, the United States could veto that. But they should try and restrain Israel. That is what could bring an end to this conflict.
Mm. Dr. Amuka Kwemata, thank you so much for always making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
You're tuned into On the Reading News Bulletin right here on Eagle FM. Let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace, and when we do return, we are bringing you news beyond the borders. Now, remember that I've told you that our studio line is open. You can also partake in the news bulletin by dialing us up on 083-288-401. As for now, I'll see you after the commercial break.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Now, this is the point we take you to news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa, where 8 out of 10 clauses of the Freedom Charter have been fully implemented. Let's take a listen.
Now, they knew here inside the White House that there was inevitably going to be a retaliation.
Arguing that it dilutes the principle of African ownership. Although South Africans from all walks of life participated in the adoption of the Charter, it remains an ANC document. Former ANC Secretary General and now its National Chair Gwede Mantashe says they've managed to live up to the ideals of this historic document. He insists that only 2 of its 10 clauses remain a work in progress.
The clauses of the Freedom Charter, there are 10. 8 of those clauses in the preamble have been implemented almost fully. We have 2 clauses that are work in progress. One of them is the land question. The second one is the wealth.
With the recent signing of the expropriation bill into law, current ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula says slowly but surely they will realize the full implementation of the ideals of the charter.
If you take land and wealth, we are implementing that within the framework of economic transformation. That is why we have repealed the Act of 1975 and introduced the Act of Land Expropriation. That on its own is the implementation of the Freedom Charter, bit by bit. As we come back to power in full swing, that program will be accelerated without negotiating with anyone. And the setback we have suffered affect the implementation and faster implementation of the Freedom Charter.
However, after 30 years of freedom, and with South Africa still the most unequal society in the world, Mbalula concedes that it has been difficult to see the realization of all the clauses of the Freedom Charter.
Of course, we are executing the full realization of the Freedom Charter within a democratic process, which at the present moment does not favor the ANC. We have ensured that over 30 years, a better life for all is actually finding expression in our programs. Because a better life for all is the full realization of the Freedom Charter. Even in other areas that you can mention, is not yet full cycle of what the Freedom Charter says.
There is a broad consensus that most of the objectives of the Charter have been realized, at least according to political analyst Mwele Tsimbeki.
Now in Kenya, avocado farming Kenya's avocado farming, a spotlight on thriving agricultural enterprise.
A mesmerizing spiral pattern of vibrant green avocado trees, their glossy leaves glinting under the golden evening sun. As I absorb the serene beauty and symmetry of the avocado farms, I cast my eyes on a farmer inspecting the condition of the fruits, the majority of them approaching maturity. This is Richard Wafula, the general manager at Sunripe Kenya and responsible for the avocado sector. He tells me, this is one of the company's key avocado production sites, spanning about 200 hectares. They grow Hass and Fuerte varieties, which are in high demand globally, especially in China.
And this is the land that we also wanted to do. Our big land like this, that we can have our own production and proper management of quality. Because now our orders were increasing from different destinations.
But Sunripe doesn't just rely on this land. It can't keep up with the high demand they see for avocados. Wafula says over 3/4 of Kenya's avocado production comes from smallholder farmers, with the company enlisting over 2,000 local farmers in Naivasha and nearby regions to source additional fruit. However, many lack experience.
According to reports, a lot of Kenyan farmers lose value on their products due to poor handling of their crops from the farm all the way to the market, right?
Yes, that's right.
Wafula says poor quality translates to a lot of rejection as far as global markets like China are concerned. To ensure this is significantly cut, Sunripe offers training, seedlings, and support to farmers.
And as we speak right now, the farmers, there's no farmer who can get a rejection percent above 5 to 6%. Their rejection level is very lower than that. And the farmers are happy because if they have about 1 ton and they are getting about 10 kilos of rejection or maybe 5 kilos of rejection, the farmers are very happy.
From the farm, the avocados come to this state-of-the-art processing facility. This is where the fruit is prepared for its journey to markets as far away as China. Shah says this facility is the heart of their export operations. every avocado you see here is carefully sorted, washed, graded, and packed to meet the strict standards of markets like China and Europe. He says since Kenya signed a trade agreement with China in 2022 for fresh avocados, the company's business has seen tremendous growth.
With over a billion people in the Chinese market alone, we have found that avocados are the 11th most eaten fruit in the Chinese market. Obviously, the big fruits are apples, citrus, bananas, watermelons. Avocados are number 11, but growing at the rate of 300% a year. Consumption is really increasing.
China's demand for avocados is huge and largely driven by a growing middle class who have an appetite for healthy premium produce. Kenya's avocado trade with China has skyrocketed since the 2022 agreement. In 2023, it exported approximately 10,000 metric tons of avocados to China, valued at over $20 million. By 2024, this figure had grown to an estimated 15,000 metric tons, with projections for 2025 suggesting even higher volumes.
So we need the Kenyan government and the private sector to work together to go and start promoting Kenyan fruit. China has five tier one cities. You got Shanghai, you got Beijing, you got Chongqing, you got all these tier one cities. We need to go and tell them to buy from Kenya.
China's appreciation for avocados has not only boosted Kenya's economy, but also created thousands of jobs in farming, logistics, and processing. Enoch Sikolia, CGTN, Naivasha, Kenya.
Good afternoon to you and welcome to the Farm Kenya Show.
And lastly, let's move over to international news, where U.S. President Donald Trump warns Israel after it vows powerful strike on Iran.
Has been speaking in the last few minutes, just as he left the White House on the way to Joint Base Andrews, just a very short ride by helicopter from the White House, matter of 5 or 6 minutes or so. But before he boarded the helicopter, he did make his first remarks since posting about the ceasefire between Iran and Israel, saying he was unhappy with Iran. He was also unhappy with Israel, but he was more unhappy, he said, with Israel than Iran. Let's have a listen to those remarks.
They didn't have to unload, and I didn't like the fact that the retaliation was very strong, but in all fairness, Israel unloaded a lot. And now I hear Israel just went out because they felt it was violated by one rocket that didn't land anywhere. That's not what we want, I'll tell you. And I'm telling you, I'm not happy about that, Israel, either. All I do is play both sides. I'm going now, as you know, to NATO. Some of you are going with me, and I think it's going to be successful. We'll see. I'll let you know.
Are you going to meet the agreement? It's a new dawn in the Middle East. The agreement you managed to achieve. What are your future plans for the region, for Saudi Arabia, Israel, Gaza, the hostages?
Look, you're asking me about women in the Middle East. It's getting a lot better. Things are happening at a high level. As you know, Saudi Arabia's done a really good job. It's coming out far faster than I thought. So we're very happy about what's happening with women in the Middle East.
No, I'm talking about a new dawn in the Middle East that you managed to achieve last night.
Yeah.
You know, the region is going to a new place with the peace agreement. Can you tell us what's your future plans for Gaza, for the hostages?
Yeah. It's a new dawn. I appreciate the question. You're very nice. Who are you?
Thank you. I'm Maria Cross from Israeli Shuttle for 2 years.
Well, we have to have Israel calm down because they went on a mission this morning. I got to get Israel to calm down now.
Can you get to speak with the violent Prime Minister? Did he talk to Prime Minister?
So President Donald Trump says he has to get Israel to calm down now. And he is clearly unhappy with Israel. But I guess this is the moment a lot of people have been waiting for Trump to actually tell Israel, to cease the fire. And with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. Make sure that you tune in again tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on Eagle FM from 1300 hours up until 1430, where we bring you not just the news, but the news and interrogate it further to understand what it actually means in the broader context of social and economic benefit of the Namibian people. Now, you can also partake in the news bulletin. Make sure that you get ready to do so tomorrow. Now, from Indafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye. I now hand over the mic to David Chombe as he brings you our Onkonana Dingi program that is on news bulletin in Oshiwambo. With that, after that, the Home Run Show comes your way from 16:30 and with Dwight and Helmut, and it's going to keep you company on your way back home. Goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.